Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Dungeons & Demogorgons, the officially unofficial podcast for Stranger Things on Netflix. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we're back for our wrap-up podcast from Season 3. There are Demogorgons everywhere in the studio. They're outside the doors. They're screaming about, I don't know, probably the lunch they had. What'd you think of Season 3 in general after having a week to reflect on it? Maybe what are some of your favorite parts, that sort of thing?
My opinion wasn't changed very much. I thought that this was a good season. It's the least grounded season. I think many other seasons felt like more plausibly small town Indiana with paranormal things happening, where this the Russians building a mall complex and exploiting Hawkins, that constantly kind of strained my suspension of disbelief. But it's fun enough, and I mean, it's kind of like Indiana Jones, man. Like, do you want to believe that Nazis can get a hold of Christian relics to try to take over the world or not? Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where I just kind of let the rule of cool carry me through. And there's a few times where I don't feel like that they were as careful. There are some scenes where it's like we even mentioned, like, how the heck does Billy get once he attacks a lifeguard? How does he get her back to that facility? How does when they're conducting the sauna test, how is it that nobody notices all this? How does no one notice someone getting blown through the side of the building? And they didn't sweat those details as much. But the reason it doesn't fall apart is because they sweat the big stuff. Mm-hmm. Exquisitely. Everything in the last three episodes just was one string of consequences that led to another, and actions that then brought the characters back together, and they had to set those things up three or four episodes before, and that stuff feels really refreshing and rewarding. So I don't know how much they can keep making this thing bigger and bigger and bigger and still keep it be Stranger Things. And I think the Duffer brothers know that, which is why they've kind of been signaling that maybe next season's the end. Certainly, there's no way to stretch this out beyond season 5. And as long as they hold that commitment, then I think Stranger Things has a chance to go down. If not one of the best, certainly the most fun and, kind of a universally admired television series with just such a great cast and engaging plot. What'd you think?
I agree with all of that. It's expertly written, expertly directed, and expertly acted for the most part. I think there are moments in this where they start to lean maybe a little too much into the Stranger Things wheelhouse, and a lot of people get turned off by that stuff. I'm not really one of them. I think some of the tropey stuff they do in this is warranted entirely by the setting, entirely by what type of show this is, who it's for, those kinds of things. And I think if you take it overly seriously, you risk missing the point of the whole thing. So I found myself going back and watching a few episodes last night, really enjoying those moments where it's these characters are ridiculous and over the top. And, could the Russians really infiltrate under Hawkins in the end? I don't know, but that's not the point. The point is, in the 80s, these movies were happening a lot like this.
Right.
And so when they do these homages, when they do these things that seem silly in quote-unquote real life, it just works because it's a product of the time.
Yeah, one of the most popular movies I can remember growing up is Red Dawn, where I believe the Russians parachuted troops in Colorado. And no one knew about it. Yeah. NORAD just decided not to come to work that day.
Yeah.
It's and we were talking about when they just flung fireworks at the creature, and mean, some of that stuff is just ripped right out of the 80s movies. They were all kind of silly and cheesy, and this is just kind of like the very best version of that. Mm-hmm. So part of that, like, if part of that nostalgia trip requires you to swallow some of these kind of ridiculous premises, because some of the premises in 80s entertainment was pretty fucking ridiculous.
Yeah.
So
it's interesting to me in this season that they sort of, so they, it becomes clear to me after watching this that they pay very close attention to what people do and do not like about the show, and they tailor the next season to that pretty heavily, because if it's in there at all, it's extremely subtle and it's periphery kind of stuff. But like the stuff with Eight, the mm-hmm. stuff with Chicago from last season, not even mentioned in this season. Mm-hmm. Now, that may come roaring back in season four. I don't know how they're going to play that. But, you know, it was kind of nice that they took the thing that fans had the most complaints with across the board and just right. said, yeah, let's not do that.
Just ran away from it.
And they took all the things that fans love and they ran with those things.
Yeah. I do think that now that we've said that we're fine with it, I do think they are, especially with like some of the product placement stuff where it feels like you can hear the cha-ching in the background. That's getting a little much. And it's so funny because I was listening to some of our season two coverage and we specifically defended some of that stuff. It's like, well, what do you want? Would you rather than be eating, you know, Tennessee fried chicken, this is just so like the artistic integrity of it's pure. But it does feel like the more they make deals with Burger King and the more they, you know, splash around Whoppers and new Cokes and things like that, the and like the Lucas, like the way he even posed is like a classic Coke commercial where he tilts his head back and drinks it and you know, it's like mm-hmm. That does, I think, start to trade a little bit on your artistic integrity, and that's starting to be distracting. And maybe I wouldn't even notice if it wasn't, but you know, our fans pointing it out and complaining about it themselves. But I felt like I was a little bit aware of it, and I do think that, like, as much as we love the tropes and all that kind of stuff, that there is a fine line where you can go over, and you know, the reason you care about these characters is because they feel real and there's real stakes. And if they keep getting out of situations through like last minute coincidences or kind of childish theatrics, the older they get, I don't know that that will still be compelling. Now, you know, they answered that question this year by like, you know, killing off a periphery character that we came to care about, just like they did with Bob Newby last year. They killed Alexi.
I thought you were going to say Hopper.
Well, I was getting there.
Character we don't care about. No.
And they also then kill the main cast character. Yeah. But as we're going to discuss, and as we discuss like live, there's reason to believe that that's going to be the walked back.
Yeah.
So
for sure.
I think again, the Duffer brothers know all this. Like, mm-hmm. you know, one of the feedback that went back and like listened to our Stranger Things 2 wrap up podcast, and we talked about like you just can't have another finale where Eleven's stretching her fingers out and screaming closing a gate. And the Duffer's like, yep, you're right. We can't do that. And mm-hmm. we have to have the gang kind of save Eleven instead of the other way around. And they did that. So it's like, they know, if nothing else, they know how to tell a story and they know the rhythms of it. So it's like, I don't know how much it is like that they're relying on the fan feedback and how much of they just know as storytellers, we have pumped this well, it's running dry. We gotta drill a new well. And you know, moving around to seasons, having different stakes, killing off a main cast character. I think these are all depowering Eleven. Mm-hmm. Like that's going to be huge for next season. And these are things that are all very smart to keep the audience engaged.
Yeah. They're definitely setting up drama with that. But I guess the reason I say they responded to, I guess, the dislike for the Chicago stuff last season is because they were definitely setting something up there. Mm-hmm. And as of yet, they have not knocked it down. I don't know if they intend to, but like, I feel like they were leading into a season three where that was a bigger part of it. And they saw the reaction and they said, we can just kind of leave it where it is. And, you know, if we figure out a way to bring that back later, we'll do it. If not, it can just be, you know, this sort of like half misstep in season two that we then course corrected.
See, I would love to see Eleven and some of the gang cruising around in like an A-team type van and recruiting other former experiments from Hawkins' lab, like going to her sister. Mm-hmm. Was it Eight?
But it has to be the problem Callie. I had with the season two stuff is it wasn't integrated well enough with the story. Like I didn't feel like it was all part of the same thing. That felt like a side quest.
Right.
And I was on the main quest and I wanted to see that through.
But if
if they can figure out a way to integrate that into the main quest, let's do it.
Yeah, so let's grant that there's going to be some kind of rescue operation.
Yeah.
And Eleven's going around and she's recruiting, like she knows her sister's out there, so she goes recruits that because she needs big guns. She doesn't have any of her own anymore. Mm-hmm. And then maybe Eight's got a connection to some of the other children, like, and each episode introduces them and you get to know them as a character. And then you've got like, you know, instead of having one character we're familiar with meet another character we've only seen for like 5 minutes and then immediately get introduced to this other dizzying array of crazy, weird, off-putting characters, you are instead taking the big group you care about and you're adding a new recruit over the next two or three episodes. So you've got like three or four psychic kids. I think that could work. And there's no way that they finish out Stranger Things, whatever ends up being a quadrilogy or a quintilogy. No way they finish that without going back and checking on the rest of the Hawking Labs experiments.
Yeah, I think when we talk sort of about season four and what we think may or may not happen, I think there's a lot to dive into there with, you know, that sort of final stinger scene and stuff like that. Where the doors are still open. The possibility is there to come back to that. But I want to talk about some of my favorite moments from the season.
Yeah, shoot.
Like, I know that, like, the Neverending Story thing has blown up. It's it's all over the place. There's the Neverending Challenge thing going on. Like,
what's that? I didn't see that.
So I guess, like, on... I don't know if it's, like, Instagram or TikTok. I don't know where Millie Bobby Brown's doing her thing on social. But she's... She recorded this video of her like lip syncing to the song and dancing, and it's kind of trending now as Never Ending Challenge.
Oh, I see. It's the new Harlem Shake.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
There have been many, many other Harlem Shakes since Harlem Shake.
Sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So people are doing that now. But yeah, like that scene was amazing. I really like that scene. I really love the fireworks stuff. When they're fighting the monster, it just looks really cool. Even though it's pretty ineffective.
That's the Neverending Story is just Stranger Things to the max. Like that is because it was out of nowhere. It was literally the culmination of a season long plot with Susie, and the in-universe's reactions were perfect. Like you had people like acting with impatience, annoyance to just like Hopper's classic like what the fuck am I hearing. And that's what makes those moments work.
Yeah. I really like Robin's reaction. She's just like, what?
Right.
What are we doing?
Right.
It's just like this sort of amused but also exasperated look that she gives. It's nice. And then there are a couple of like really heartfelt moments that I like. One is the fight between Will and his friends over the D&D campaign. Mm-hmm. I thought was excellently acted, excellently written. And then the letter that Hopper leaves and the reading of that and Elle's reaction to it all, I think is truly a great way to go out on this season.
Mm-hmm. And it's a way to have your cake and eat it too, because, I mean, just judging by everyone's feedback, like the emotional payload, even though everyone is skeptical that it's actually primed to blow, let's say, it's still delivered, the emotional part of it. If it turns out that he's not actually dead, our characters don't know that, and they grieved as if he was. And that's fine, as long as it's the only time they ever do this in a finale. And also, like, the other rule I have is, like, I don't think they can do this. They can't kill Hopper now. Because
if he's
like
not dead now,
it's the
they
rule
can't
of Glenn.
Kill him. Yeah,
like, you can't. Because they already pumped all the emotion out of that well, so like they can kill Joyce, they can kill one of the kids, or they can kill Eleven. That's what I personally think is going to happen. I don't think Eleven makes it out of the series, but they can't. I don't think they can go back to the Hopwell.
Yeah.
My favorite moments were when Steve and Robin got drugged. And then there was the inversion of the Steve's the group mom trope well, it's not even a trope. It's just what they were doing the last two, that, you know, that this guy who has no business being a parent mm-hmm. is put in a position where he's responsible for the lives of these young kids and he rises to the occasion. I loved seeing Dustin and Erica thrust in that same position and them doing arguably worse. Like, Steve never lost a kid. Dustin,
yeah,
Erica,
things got out of his control in season two, but he got his ass beat and yeah. he got beat unconscious. Like, what are you gonna do?
Yeah. Dustin just literally looked the other way and Erica got engrossed in watching. Of course they're much younger, but I just love that. I loved how, like, kind of like jackass rebellious they were to Dustin. I loved Steve's, like, making fun of the Russians under the influence of the drugs and the facial God. Expressions he was working.
Yeah. He's really good with comedy.
Yeah, I'm actually...
Joe Keery's good.
I'm actually... Has he done anything besides Stranger Things?
Not that I've seen, but probably.
Because I feel like he's earned me watching his next three projects.
Yeah.
To see what he can make of it, because he could be a Michael J. Fox level star, I think. He's got that kind of charisma, mm-hmm. comic timing, dramatic chops. Like, there's a lot of things he could do with that. And I'm curious to see what he ends up doing with it.
And then everything that Murray was doing. Like,
oh my God.
I just liked every moment that Murray was on screen.
Yeah, he's a real gem of a character mm-hmm. because he just Brett Gelman is so good at playing these not really assholes with a heart of gold, just assholes that happen to be right or correct. So like you, even yeah. if you hate them, like you can't say they're wrong or you can't discount what they're saying. What he did to Jonathan's mom and her, you know, and Hopper, which was such a nice mirror image to the Nancy and Jonathan stuff. It's just sublime. Mm-hmm. I love him forming an unlike, like he was the one that's most against, I can't believe you brought an enemy of the state. Yeah. And then him and, Alexi end up bonding in a very sweet way. And then you completely feel death. And the other layer of like sublimeness is like, even when you're feeling sorry for him or you're like joining him in grief, you still can't help but notice he's wearing these short jean cutoffs.
Right.
So it's like anytime you get too bummed out, you just look at what he's wearing and what can you say to that?
Can I ask you a very serious question?
Sure.
One that I have struggled with my entire life.
Okay.
What good is an undershirt tank top? Because in my opinion, and this is what he's wearing like throughout mm-hmm. most of this show, in my opinion, an undershirt is there to prevent the sweat from your body reaching your actual shirt.
I think you're right.
In a tank top form, an undershirt seems to have no purpose.
I've never worn the iconic wife beater, as they're called, because of that very thing. I guess I would say that, like, my armpits are definitely the sweatiest part of my body mm-hmm. if I'm doing something, but I wear antiperspirant there. Mm-hmm. The second is, like, you know, like the chest area gets sweaty. So, like, maybe if you yeah. think, hey, I got my armpits antiperspiranted and deodorized, and I want them to vent, but I'm not, I got no speed stick on my chest and my shoulders and my back, so I want okay. that separation.
I can understand that. Is there savings to be had in not having sleeves then?
I don't think it's savings.
Is
I think
it cheaper?
It's a vent. I think it's a vent thing. Like it's
gonna keep you
my
cooler.
My pits can vent, and you rely on the ventilation and the antiperspiration to control the moisture.
I guess I got to try it for myself. Experiment yeah. with the tank top undershirt and see.
Got to.
What kind of effects I get?
I mean, here's the thing.
I've never understood it.
Like, they're a long time bestseller. Like, people are still wearing mm-hmm. them today. Like, there's got to be something. If the t-shirt was clearly superior to the tank top, then why don't more people? Why does anyone wear the tank tops?
That's a damn fine question.
Maybe it's an option for gentlemen that don't sweat as heavily as I tend to. Like,
yeah,
I can work
be.
Up a sweat screwing in a light bulb. Mm-hmm. You know, so like if maybe if you're not as heavy as a perspirer, you want the extra kind of gauzy vented feel.
All right. Well, we've solved that.
Yeah. I think the Hawking's laboratory needs to reopen and get to the bottom of that
right.
question. What's the science behind the tank top?
In the upside down, they wear very different tank tops.
I think they just free ball in the
yeah.
upside down, it seems like.
Let's talk about the future of this show real quick. Because the kids are getting older, and I think noticeably so.
Yep.
You can see it in this season. They're starting to turn into young men, not children, young women, not girls. I feel like that has put a limited shelf life on this show. Because I don't, maybe this is just my personal opinion, but I don't feel like I want to, I'm necessarily as interested in watching a show about a group of late teens trying to fight off the Demogorgons and the Mind Flayers of the Upside Down.
Yeah.
It was always, there's something vulnerable about children that is not necessarily there when they get to be, you know, 17, 20, something like that. That really, for me, makes this show. And they're running out of time. And I know they're talking like season four or five could potentially be the last of the show. And I think that's a good idea. And I think I would actually prefer it to be season four. Is the final season. I think they could do one more of these and really tie it all together, end it in this very satisfying way. If they stick around too long, they risk ruining the thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think, and I think they know that. Like, I would love for them to see them put a nice bow on this particular arc, and then I think I would like to see the person 10 years from now that wouldn't be excited hearing about a Stranger Things reunion. Where, you know, it's been a decade since we've been to Hawkins and bring as much of the original cast back. Some of them might have, like, and we talked about that in the episode 8 podcast, but I think that would be a great idea. And then you also have a lot more opportunities to tell stories, and you can do more things with, like, what of the, you know, what kind of adults have these kids become? You know, what does Hawkins look like now? There's a lot of fun things, you know, the Cold War's over, so that might be an interesting, you know, like, what would be... what would be causing the flare up this time. I think that would be a great idea, but I agree. I don't think there's any way, like, once these kids get to be like Nancy and Jonathan's age from the first season or first series.
Yeah.
It's tough. Once they get to be like juniors in high school, you know, if they're all like as capable as like Steve and Nancy and Jonathan, and then you also have Steve and Nancy and Jonathan who are in their early 20s and probably have firearms and shit, then, and you also have the best psychic cannon in the world, 11, then they start to run out of gas. So yeah, I'm in agreement with that.
Speaking of 11, let's talk a little bit about some of the end of this series and what they might do with it in season four. Like you mentioned earlier, I think Elle's powers being temporarily offline are going to be a big dramatic driver next season. Her kind of understanding why her powers are offline and trying to figure out how to get them back, probably under some sort of duress, I think is going to be really interesting. I don't know how everybody feels about that, but I'm all in for it. The other big thing is the question of Hopper. Is Hopper alive? Is Hopper dead?
So I thought that I actually thought I did a pretty good job of finding all of the tells organically, but there's one big one that I missed, and it's a really subtle and a great one. I got this off of Reddit. But do you remember the song Peter Gabriel's Heroes that they played as like Elle's reading the note and had this like grief montage of everyone reacting to his death and saying goodbye?
Yep.
Do you remember the other time that that song was featured in Stranger Things?
No.
It was when they found Will's fake body in season one.
Okay.
So like, so let's just go over all of the Hopper's not dead theory. You read the letter, and at the very end, he says, "You leave the door cracked open 3 inches for your poor old dad." He was trapped between a closing portal to the Upside Down and an energy field that would, I don't know, strip the atoms from his body. At the post-credit scene, we hear that in this Russian facility that's housing a Demogorgon Demogorgon, and they're obviously still doing portal research. There's a cell with an unnamed American in it. Also, I want to throw in a piece of feedback from Scotland K, who is a Russian study student in college. And he said that, because I had mentioned that the Terminator, when he said, referred to the Americans, he used this word that sounded like American, Americans, And I said that they changed the subtitle to be The American. But he mentioned that, like, this word they used, Americanets, is actually Russian is one of those languages that has grammatical gender. You know, like in Spanish, you've got like things in O are roughly masculine, things that end in A are feminine. Mm-hmm. Russian's the same way. And this particular word is the singular masculine word for an American person. And that's the same word that they use to refer to whoever's in that cell. So they're really making the connection that that's probably Hopper. And then, and then, but then
we'll
you get,
it, but yeah.
you get the Peter Gabriel's Heroes. The only ever time we've seen that in theory is when we were having the wool pulled over our eyes. They were showing us a dead body of Will, but it's not actually Will. I think, you know, it's a 99% lock that, Hopper is not dead. Now, yeah. I still really like my theory that, it's not Hopper in that cell.
Yeah. I think. We kind of talked about this in the finale mm-hmm. episode right after we watched it. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense that Hopper would be in the Upside Down and that Elle, without her powers, might be able to know he's there but not help get him out of there, which sets up like a huge drama for season four.
Well, someone, because we're like way off of my outline here, but so I'm gonna hand wave to it and then give you credit later in the podcast. But someone said that if you called Murray's phone number, like we talked about, he talks a mess about how he doesn't want anything except for his mom, but to call him and don't leave a message. But he also says something about he has an update for Joyce. I didn't think of anything of it because when I listened to that, it was like episode five or whatever. But it would be interesting if it's not 11 because she's depowered, it figures it out. But like maybe this is something from an official government agency, or maybe something that Murray has figured out in like some background chatter, because he know he's really interested in the Russians, and this like thing's going to just even make him more interested in Russian conspiracies. What update would he have for Joyce? He's going to be the one that tells them that Hopper's actually alive, or it could be that Dr. Paul Reiser is going to be the one that says, you know, we saw some anomalous readings as the portal was closing. But I don't know, because like my guess is if Hopper is strung up in the Upside Down, then who is the doctor that created L?
Brenner.
Dr. Brenner might be captured and like a hostage of the Soviets and being forced, or maybe he's doing it of his own free will, though I don't know why he'd be in a cell. But that way, you know, like we said, the Duffer brothers kind of have their cake and eat it too. So they've got everyone's guessed the broad truth that Hopper's still alive, but they've done some sleight of hand so he's not actually in Russia.
Yeah, it seems to me, after having watched the finale again, like there's a moment where this thing is exploding and they kind of cut to the gate as it's closing. Mm-hmm. And this is right after they show like, okay, well, Hopper isn't here. We didn't see him get exploded. We see the gate closing. It's almost like they're inferring or wanting us to infer that he did jump through the gate.
Right.
I've seen some other people say that like that platform actually just leads down to the floor and he probably could have run off down the stairs.
But then what?
He could do like Steven and Dustin and everybody did, like ran kind of through another door and into another room.
But then
got captured by the Russians.
But then like I would be extremely surprised if any Russian in that base made it off US soil. Yeah, what they did was part of some kind of hostage or prisoner exchange thing.
Well, I don't know if the tunnels are connected to the farms at all. Like there's some implication there that like these tunnels are sort of interconnected and there are a lot of different entrances.
So you could escape out the farm, like you capture Hopper, escape out of the farm, and then smug yourself out of the country.
Maybe.
Yeah, you're right. We don't know enough about the underground base to know for sure that there's no back tunnels or exits.
We have to ask Erica and Dustin. They know.
Right, because it's not like the Marines knew that, like, oh, this is everything we know about. It's like they just went to the mall to contain this thing, and if some of the Russians got out the back door, then maybe not. So, yeah, that's a strong possibility, because I just took it for granted. Maybe, there's no way anyone gets out of there, so there's only one way to get out, and that's like, I would believe that he could go through the gate and get stuck in the Upside Down, or I could also believe that, like, he would just step through the gate and through some kind of timey-wimey, altered dimensional stuff, just like spit out the other side in Russia, maybe. Mm-hmm. But you're right. They could have just gotten him out conventional. I do think that that's one of the first things they have to establish in a new season. Like, we need a flashback to shows either Hopper getting blown into the portal or crawling down that ladder or being clubbed by the Russian commandant guy. Mm-hmm. Something. We got to know. And they'll tell. They know how to tell a story. They'll tell us that.
Oh, yeah.
What else do we want to talk about? So Hopper is, we think, is alive.
Pretty sure.
Not sure how, not sure where, but he's definitely alive. Did you read any theories about L's powers? Like,
No.
Let me float this one by you.
Okay.
Do you think L's powers are reduced because she just used them too much? Like, we've never established the upper limit of her power, but, you know, we know she used to get tired. Like, the first time she tried, like, just crushing a Coke can wiped her out. Mm-hmm. Here she had to use more energy than she ever has before. She explained it as her battery ran down.
Yeah.
But the 3 months later, it still hasn't charged. So you think that she's... Is it a battery problem?
I don't know. It could be something... mental. It could be. I'm struggling to think like exactly what the mental hang up would be here.
Right.
But maybe it's more mental. I don't know.
Well, we know that like it seemed like her powers are stronger when she's angry, like when she can like channel rage or something like that. Maybe this profound sense of loss and grief is like the opposite. It's like a wet blanket on her powers. And as she is able to emotionally heal and recover, maybe she can get her powers back. The thing that I think is the most interesting is, what if this is somehow a result of the bite and the infection she had from the upside down? Because I'm really interested to see the one advantage that L has always had over these upside down creatures is that while they are extremely powerful physically, and very hard to kill and very mutable in what they can do and what they can live off of and subsist on, they don't have any kind of psychic powers, it doesn't seem like. Well,
they do. Will and the Mind Flayer somehow connected and
yeah. They can actually, I guess, take over people mentally, but they can't like telekinetically fling things around. They have to actually the defect things at a distance. Yeah. They either have to take over a host, which does seem like it introduces them to some vulnerabilities as well, or they have to actually go and physically trounce you. Is it possible that now that this thing's had a taste of 11 and maybe absorb some of her powers, that the big threat next year is you're going to have Demogorgons who have mutant powers?
Oh boy, how do you stop that?
I mean,
it would stretch credibility that, well, they could even stop.
That's
it,
why you might need a bunch of L's brothers and sisters.
Yeah, fair.
You need a whole squad of psychically attuned, gifted youngsters.
I suppose it's possible. Really, anything is possible.
Yeah. And the other thing I wanted to talk about, like a hook to the future, is L's sisters, but I feel like we've already talked about that.
Okay.
So, and
I know we have a ton of feedback. So.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, just real quick, Lauren M is the one that sent in the reminder about Murray's phone number. That if you call, he mentions that she's trying to reach Joyce about an update. Hey, everybody, before we get further into our discussion, just want to let you know what's going on baldmove.com this week. On Bald Move TV, it's really easy to find. Just go to your favorite podcast app, search for Bald Move TV. Seth and I will be continuing our coverage of Hulu's Harlots. A really fun show. It's on its third season. We're in episode 2. And then Jim and I are looking forward to August, when AMC's The Terror, Infamy, comes back. Last year, The Terror was the surprise hit. It actually made a lot of noise in the Baldies. Jared Harris took home Baldies Gold in the 2018 Baldies Awards. This is going to feature George Takei, and it's going to be set in the Japanese internment camps during World War II. Something horrific is happening in that community. If you like Stranger Things and you want a little taste for something a little bit more dark, a little bit more adult, I highly recommend that you joining us August for that. And that will also be in a Bald Move TV feed. We also are going to be releasing for club members an Empire Business podcast this Thursday with an accompanying video podcast where we talk about our video strategy and some of the upgrades we're doing with the new studio. And then also on Thursday, we'll be seeing a first-run Bald movie, The Lion King. Finally, the live-action Lion King that we've all been waiting for.
Okay.
Then we've also got a bunch of movies coming up. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Quentin Tarantino's latest, and Tarantino apparently is how I'm pronouncing it. Mm-hmm. And also a Fast and Furious story, Hobbs and Shaw, which just looks badass.
Yeah, I'm excited for
completely
that one.
Fucking badass, and we'll be there to cover it. That is in the Bald Movies feed, which you can also find in the podcast app of your choice.
Got one other thing to promote before we get out of here. It's my girlfriend's pin website, pin-y.com. We have a Stranger Things pin sort of collaboration that we're doing with her. It's one of those pins where the font looked at from one angle says Stranger, and if you flip it over, sort of like you're in the Upside Down, it says Things. It's pretty cool if you are interested in enamel pins, and I have to stress that it's P-I-N, not P-E-N. They're said the same. It's mm-hmm. It's hard to keep those things straight.
Damn you, English language.
PIN-Y.com if you want to check that out. Last chance, I think.
Yeah, I got it. I got to take a look at that this weekend. It's really swanky looking. I think it's even cool. Glow in the dark.
Yes, that's it does glow in the dark.
Yeah, she's going crazy with the enamel options there.
Yeah, it's really cool.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of Apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off badass season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints. Except, it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for a podcast that really spoke to them, or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love.
Before we continue, I want to talk about a great way to support the Bald Move with the club, theclub.baldmove.com. If you have enjoyed our coverage of Stranger Things, please consider supporting us. You get a lot of cool special things for yourself, extra audio content and visual content, enhanced content, for ad-free feeds, a bunch of other stuff. You can go to club.baldmove.com to test drive these features and sign up. Last week, we had a little bit of a snafu that caused us to not be able to process new club membership. So if you heeded my call to action last year and ran into the teeth of that, we apologize. We have got it polished up and fixed, and we are now welcoming. We got the welcome mat back out for new club members. Most of our revenue comes from direct listener support. It's one of the ways that we're able to maintain our independent status as podcasters. So if you have appreciated our Stranger Things coverage, if you'd like to see us continue to cover some of these smaller shows, some of these like bingier shows that require a lot of labor and time to cover, please go to club.baldmove.com and chip in your membership. There is a question that Caitlin T had about how they will get the gang back together for next year.
Yeah.
She says, does the Hawking group go to the new Boyce /11 location? I don't know what the show would be like if they left Hawkins. Do you have any thoughts about what the probability of the show moving away from Hawkins to a different Indiana town? I'm actually kind of pro, because I feel like they've busted Hawkins all the way up. It might be time to move to the next smaller shithole town, because this one's gotten a little bit too big and cratery for my tastes. And also would make sense, because who the hell stays around in Hawkins? Like, this is 3 separate years that you've had a chemical leak or missing people, and now there's like, there was 50 or some plus people that have gone missing and killed.
Mayor and Russian invasion.
Hawkins might be cursed. So I could see it be an interesting way for them to reset the tone and the feeling of the show. It's like, okay, back to small town middle America. Mm-hmm. We flirted around with like medium town middle America. We're going back home to small town.
How about this? All Chicago.
All Chicago?
Oh yeah.
Why not? Why go the opposite direction, the biggest of the middle American cities.
Yep. You could have a battle at the top of Sears Tower.
Yeah.
Which I think would have been still named Sears Tower at that point.
Sure.
I don't know when it was built, actually. I'm sure it's a very old building.
I guess the only thing, the argument about staying with Hawkins is there are physically special things about Hawkins that they've established about, like, it's got permeability between one dimension and the next, and like, it seems likely that it's always going to be a hot spot unless the events of next season take place entirely in Kamchuk, Russia, which I don't buy for a minute. Then it seems like we're going to be stuck in Hawkins. She also ponders, do you think that this next season might be centered around a holiday? Because we've got the gang split up. Is there going to be a summer road trip, Thanksgiving break, Christmas break, spring break?
I mean, if you really want to kick it into high gear, you set it in winter. You set it around Christmas. That's, you know, kind of just a fun time in general, but also that's when maybe the Upside Down will be the most active or have the most potential for damage, because they like the cold.
Right. It's like the height of their powers, and we just got them. Plus, it's another change in kind of like the look and feel. And
yeah,
Midwestern Christmas is I've got a soft spot for it because I'm a Midwestern and I love Christmas. But it'll be interesting to see that. There's also some more ideas, some more theories on that to come. Caitlin also says the idea she's personally most interested about is a time jump. Maybe the next season is actually 2 to 3 years ahead, and we jump the kids up to high school, maybe trading their bikes for driving cars and taking their first group road trip to visit Will and 11. This would help some of the cast who is a little bit aging out of their roles. Like, they're in Showtime, we've had 3 years, but the kids have had like 5.5, 6, and you can definitely tell with some of them that they're getting grown.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I'm not as inherently interested in the older teenage story as I am these younger kids. But yeah, it's a problem. You either got to go older with the characters. Well, I guess you have to go older with the characters, because you can't go younger with the actors.
Right.
So
yeah,
the story has to follow those kids, and they're getting older.
Robert L. says, what did you think, after all is said and done, about the change to the summer setting as opposed to the fall Halloween setting of season 1 and 2? Would you like to see a return to fall for season 4 or a new setting? I think I'm on team winter.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought moving this to summer did a lot for the show. Like, it was visually different. I mean, stuff we talked about in the preview podcast, like, all that stuff worked like a charm, you know?
Yeah, I mean, the kids being out of school was kind of nice.
Yeah.
We got to see a lot of them, you know, just sort of like the parents still working, mm-hmm. but the kids being out of school and having all this time and just yep. going to the mall whenever the hell they want.
And the parents being like, that's like natural. Like, oh, you know how summer is. They're just at this house or that house. And you just kind of assume like if there's any trouble, someone would call you. And it allowed them to have like, if this is school season, there's no fucking way Erica can be gone for like three goddamn days at a sleepover. No. That's and why she's tooling around in a Russian base. Like, yeah, I thought it did exactly what they wanted it to do. And it's interesting because if they do Christmas break is not the same thing. Like Christmas, like mm-hmm. I don't think kids have the personal freedom to be gone for days at a time during Christmas break because it's
freezing cold out.
It's freezing like, cold out. Yeah. You also have it's dark earlier. Mm-hmm. You also have the phenomenon of like you got to be visiting friends and family and there's actually holidays and stuff to plan. So like I like the idea of setting the winter, but if I don't think they can pull the same kind of magic trick with a winter vacation as they can in the summer one.
Yeah.
Tim from Detroit. Netflix has done Christmas specials for a few of their big shows now, such as BoJack Horseman, Sabrina, probably several others I don't watch, and it seemed to me like they were setting up Stranger Things perfectly for a special later this year. What do you think that would look like? Is it something you'd be interested in? I'm picturing something like Will and Elle returning to Hawkins for a visit and have the main plot entirely centered around Elle revealing to her friends that her powers are gone, trying to get them back, and ultimately accepting her new powerless self. If they aren't planning on keeping her powerless, maybe throw a little Coke can wiggle in there to hint that maybe she'll get them back. Mm-hmm. The important thing is I want no life-threatening monsters in the episode. Keep it light and character-focused. I've also seen some internet speculation that season 4 might drop in full as soon as Christmas this year. Obviously, that's ridiculous.
I don't know. So the writing is on the wall with these kids. They're getting older. I could see them wanting to plow through the rest of the show as fast as possible. Not necessarily with release schedule, but certainly with filming. Like, there's got to be a sense of urgency behind the scenes.
No, I agree. I'm just trying to, and this makes perfect sense. Like, it's kind of like, hey, we know these casts are getting older. That's something that we were really talking about throughout all the coverage of this season. Like, the kids are getting older. We have to find a way to hustle this up. They could pull a Lord of the Rings and just film everything.
Yeah.
But could they get away with that in secrecy?
No.
Like,
no,
this is
not
a
huge
production. Like, I mean, it's not beyond the realm of possibility because just like 6 years ago, Beyonce, the biggest pop star on the planet, managed to completely record and produce and release an album in total secrecy. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty amazing. But I imagine there's probably 20 to 30 times more people working on this show easily,
yeah,
than working for, you know, Beyonce's self-titled album, mm-hmm. as amazing as that was. So it's within the realm of possibility when Hollywood or these entertainment things want to have something to happen secret. It's possible, but holy shit. Like, how do you keep the filming location secret? How do you keep the scripts from leaking? How do you keep in people? How do you keep, you know, the guy who's doing the subtitles for Portuguese for season 4? How do you keep all that from happening? I don't know, because, like, Game of Thrones never could do it.
Yeah, no, it's with these big shows, especially the ones that have a lot of attention on them, it would be almost impossible unless they found some way to cram like the filming of seasons 3 and 4 together into, you know, what would normally be like a one season shooting schedule, mm-hmm. and just sort of used season 3 shooting as camouflage.
Yeah,
but that seems almost impossible.
It also blows. Like, so here's the other thing. I would actually buy that if next year is going to be set in the summer, or if there's actually like
right, because if you switch up the season,
yeah, like
everything changes.
There's got to be, if they have a Christmas episode with no snow and it's set in Indiana, that's bullshit.
It's all CG. Yeah. They did it on, you know, fucking Netflix soundstage in England. The kids never left. It was a 3 week shooting. Schedule.
You know what they could do? They could just like, because, you know, Hallmark makes 37 Christmas movies every year for mm-hmm. Christmas. What if they hid Stranger Things as a Hallmark production? Because they all go to Calgary and they film like these things, like when there's a bunch of snow on the ground, like, and no one gives it. No one's showing up at the sets for these fucking, like, you know, Princess Santa Claus shit that they're doing.
Yeah.
You know, Hometown Christmas 3 with, Candace Cameron, like that, no one's camping out at those sets.
Please,
so they
please,
could just...
it's Lacey Chabert. she earned the right to be in that movie.
I've watched infinity more of these than you, Jim, because I know you watched zero, and I've watched at least three. So I got a handle on who stars. Thank you very much. But you know what I'm saying? Like, they could do something like that.
Yeah, maybe.
Pay Hallmark $1 million to look the other way, take over one of their productions. I don't know, but because that's the thing. Like, it seems like this is mutually contradictory to think that this is going to come back at Christmas around the Christmas season, and also that they could hide it within the shooting of season three.
No, they hid it. Charlie Heaton hid the snow deep up his ass, I think.
Yeah. He trafficked a lot of it, and it's enough to cover the whole set.
I'm sorry, Charlie. It's the jokes. I have to make that joke.
You got to make the joke.
We're talking about
the new Coke jokes. We're going back to Coke Classic next year. No more. But
yep.
Donald writes in, bold prediction. David Harbour has a full beard in all the press coverage right now. The kind of beard you'd have if you were being kept in captivity. I think they've already filmed season four. Comic-Con is coming. How would it be if during that the Duffers dropped season four trailer on us and said coming February 2020? I know it's not likely, but a nerd can dream, right? This is amazing, and Comic-Con is going to start to rage tomorrow, Thursday.
Sometime this weekend.
It's going to start heating up, like, so by next week, if any of this stuff is true, we'll have heard about it. And I don't know, like, I'd be willing that if something like that jaw-dropping, a new trailer, I'd just come back next week and do, like, a surprise addendum to this thing, because...
Yeah.
That would be amazing, and, I mean, I almost want it to be true, but my heart wants it to be true, but my head's like, just I don't see they can keep it secret. I don't think they can turn it around. I think Harbour's the kind of guy that would just grow out a beard just because.
Okay. Yeah, it's like looking at Nick Offerman with a beard and saying, that guy must be filming something that requires a beard. No.
Right.
No, he just wants a beard. Like,
right. Yeah, once he's done with Ron Swanson, he just went back to the beard man. So I'm hoping you guys are right, and there's certainly definitely some hints that could be, but... Just the way I know Hollywood works makes me think it's wishful thinking. A Wookiee writes in, the Duffer Brothers always release a new season during the same time of year as the season takes place. The Chernobyl explosion happened, as we know, April 26, 1986. I believe it was in your preview podcast for season three that you mentioned season four possibly being about the Upside Down or the Stranger Things plot having something to do with the accident at Chernobyl. But that's not very much time to turn out a new season of the show unless they're going to make us wait a year and 10 months for next season, which I believe is unlikely. Yeah, I certainly think the reverse is true, that we're not going to get another year and a half, 2 year delay between Stranger Things.
Yeah, you can't with these kids.
If they do, then they're going to have to abandon the idea that we're going to follow these kids. They're going to have to just say, okay, yeah, we had a 3 or 4 year time jump and explain, which is, it's actually, especially if it's a final season, that's something that's totally doable. It's just, it doesn't seem like they want to do it. So I'm looking for a fast turnaround. What about if Chernobyl is included in the story, it will be something more that the monster of the season goes to Chernobyl to grow and get bigger, much like the monster from season three eating chemicals. What better way for a monster to grow than from a nuclear reactor that recently exploded and is releasing radiation? Or possibly that the Chernobyl accident was actually on purpose for the exact reason to grow the monster. Regardless, I don't think the events of season four will be the cause of Chernobyl because the turnaround time is too short. I actually... really kind of low-key love the Chernobyl theory.
Yeah.
Now that we know everything we know about season three, the fact that the Chernobyl disaster could be used as a cover for some kind of portal technology gone wrong, the fact it could be used, as you said, to like grow the monsters larger and do some interesting mutation, I think all those things are really great ideas. I just don't see Stranger Things being set in Russia. So like Chernobyl will either be... like a joke at the end that you just have to understand that like, oh, the Russians just blew themselves up and Chernobyl's, or it would be an inciting incident. The other thing, if I was a Duffers, I'd be real careful about how you use Chernobyl when we just had this like gut-wrenching, soul-searing drama about just how fucked up it was and how many people died and how heroic the like to come in and be like, oh, this is actually bullshit. It's a gut. It's almost like cheapens it.
I don't know. I mean, Stranger Things is an entirely different thing.
And no, I'm just saying that like, yeah, sometimes have to take the pop culture temperature of the room. Like if you had a banger idea in the fall of 2001 to use the World Trade Center to get blown away and open up a portal to another dimension. Tough fucking titty. You got to reshoot those scenes because everybody is going to hate it.
And if we just had a nuclear meltdown that killed tens of thousands of people in America, I would say the same. Don't do your Chernobyl idea. But a TV show based on a historical event, I don't know, in my mind, is not cause to not go to the Chernobyl well.
It is weird because it's like, you know, obviously if it hadn't been for Chernobyl miniseries, Chernobyl's far enough in the past that you could do that, and I don't think anybody'd be terribly offended, but it's almost like a reopening kind of the wound, or people are just more sensitive to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting. But on the other hand, I guess you could see that you could say that the public's kind of primed to like, oh yeah, Chernobyl, right, and to put those pieces together. So, interesting idea. Max from Australia. Leading up to season 3, there is many discussions about the implementation of time travel this season. Not only the clock in the mall when blue and yellow meets in the west, which was visible in the trailers for this season, but also the release of Back to the Future in the summer of 85 are indications that Duffers might be using time travel. Now looking back to season, I think of Hopper's final speech in which he says, maybe that's why I came in here, to turn back the clock, to make things go back to how they were. Came in here obviously relates to L's room, but it can also be interpreted as him referring to the upside down. He then goes on and says how thinking that that would be naive and how life is always moving, but for the sake of the time travel argument, one could rely on just that part of his speech alone. I agree. I was hoping that you could discuss these points in your wrap-up podcast. I'm aware that some of these interpretations are wishful thinking and that Back to the Future would be a bit too on the nose. In addition, it would not be the first time I've been fooled by this implementation of said movie hinting at time travel as seen already on Mr. Robot. I thought this was an interesting idea, and I just saw this morning a TV Guide article, and I'm going to quote from it. It says, to find the biggest clue that season 4 might include time travel, one has to go all the way back to one of the original inspirations for the show, the Montauk Project. Not to be confused with MKUltra, the Montauk Project is a conspiracy theory that the government secretly experimented in teleportation, mind control, and you guessed it, time travel based in Long Island, New York. The original pitch for the series, then called Montauk, also mentioned time travel. So we didn't get it this season, but it was clearly on the Duffers' mind, and how they originally envisioned Stranger Things was going to involve that kind of project. So I could totally see season 4 being then taking that idea off the shelf and say, hey, we hinted at it. Like Hopper's speech there, going back, like he has been in the upside down in season 1. It works on multiple levels, and it you know, obviously I'm not going to say that time travel is definitely a thing, but it's something.
I almost feel like this season would have been the season to hint at it more strongly if you were going to go there, because this is the Back to the Future time frame. And if you really wanted to let us know, I mean, maybe they don't want to let us know, but if they did, now would be the time, and they didn't really do that, in my opinion.
It's pretty smart, though, if you wanted to throw people off the trail, to like beg the time travel question this season and then have it be a Mr. Robot kind of wah wah, and then next season execute on it. And I didn't know about this history of it being originally called Montauk and being based on the Montauk Project. It's interesting. I also want to talk a little bit about the pop culture references. One of our fans, Travis G, made a YouTube video that I'm going to link in the show notes, where he kind of did a lot of these things were surprisingly not just references, but like almost shot for shot remakes of these particular visual gags. Like one from Back to the Future, where Marty is in his mom's bedroom trying desperately to put his pants on, and he falls flat on his face. Like they did that exact gag with Jonathan. Mr. Peabody on the tree farm, them running over to mailbox and through the fence. It was like literally shot for shot from Back to the Future.
Arnold Schwarzenegger coming out of the facility with a rocket or the grenade launcher.
The grenade launcher in Terminator 2 was...
The Terminator guy from this coming out of the farmhouse. Like,
again, shot for shot. I thought remember we were trying to think of like that, the significance of the Daisy Bell song that was playing on that little horse ride.
Horse, yeah.
That's something that Hal from 2001 was singing. I'm not exactly sure the reference there, because there wasn't any like computers run amok.
No, I think it's just the song was used in both.
Jaws, police chief Brody says drunkenly, "I'm the chief of police. I can do whatever he wants." And that's exactly what Hopper says as he gets up from his broken date. There's the line from Die Hard where a henchman with the same vaguely German accent says, "You're a policeman. Policemen have rules." And then a lot of the there's a lot of sequences from The Blob that I thought were very close. Like The Blob sent these like face sucking appendages out to grab onto people's faces with very similar kind of pumping effect.
A lot of those scenes look like they're also from The Abyss, maybe. Like the things where the tentacles are sort of snaking through the room look a lot like that.
And then it, of course, flowing through different grates and vents. They had some side by side footage of that. So. Did a really good job there, Travis. And,
my girlfriend last night watched episode 6, I think it is, and it's the one where the outside the hospital the thing goes into the grate and leaves the bone behind, and she was really disgusted by that. It is
gross.
They did such a great job with that monster.
Yeah, no, it's just disgusting, disgusting season.
Yeah, I love it.
Josh H. wants to give us some props because here's two quotes from a season 2 wrap-up podcast, Aaron referencing Elle and the rest of the group. I think they have to... kind of have to save her in a very real way next season. And Jim said, Back to the Future needs to be part of this next season. And he just says it's like, you know, that's as good examples of Duffers knowing how to tell a natural story.
They didn't do as much with it as I'd hoped, I guess.
I mean, it was the soundtrack for an entire episode. Like a good probably 3 or 4 minutes of the movie was actually in the show. You're right. They didn't.
I would say they went harder on like Terminator. They went harder
surprisingly hard on Terminator.
I mean, shit, the Neverending Story, I thought, got more prime time than Back to the Future.
All
in this
the Cronenberg stuff, all the thing stuff was very crucial. Even like, you know, the scenes of townsfolk stumbling into the steelworks and like throwing themselves into that was very reminiscent of like a zombies kind of like, you know, staggering and stumbling into an area. Josh also wants to know, given their track record, it's a foregone conclusion. The next season will include yet another star of 80s pop culture in some way of a supporting role. Which actor would you like to see? A few possibilities: Emilio Estevez, Anthony Michael Hall, Corey Feldman, Molly Ringwald, Eddie Murphy, Elizabeth Shue. I come up with a few others, like Ralph Macchio, because he's doing a lot of dramatic.
They mention him in this episode, too, in the season.
Oh, if they mention him, it's hard to do.
Yeah,
it's
hard the girls to mention, talk about how hot he is.
It'd be like if Arnold shows up as the new town mayor next year. It's like, you already referenced him and the Terminator. But I like, because, you know, he did some good cameo work in The Deuce last year. Josh Brolin, it wouldn't have been super fun if Josh Brolin showed up as Bob's older brother, like to collect his personal effects at the beginning of this. Wouldn't that have been fun? I guess out of Josh's list, I've always been a sucker for Elizabeth Shue.
I wish Bill Paxton was still around, man. He could have been great in this.
I like Elizabeth Shue. I like the idea of Molly Ringwald being like a new mom. Or maybe like a reporter type. She could be good at that kind of role, too.
And there's so much opportunity to bring
Like an older mentor, like a mentor for the way Steve is for like Dustin. Mm-hmm. Like what if Molly Ringwald is some kind of investigative reporter and she kind of takes Nancy under her wing? That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that could be cool.
Any other 80s?
I mean, of that list, I think I like Emilio Estevez the most because I haven't seen him in the longest time. Like,
right.
I've seen Molly Ringwald and other stuff. I've definitely seen Anthony Michael Hall everywhere on these really shitty procedural shows and stuff. But like Emilio Estevez, where is he right now?
Last time I saw him, wasn't he in like some kind of movie about aliens with their knees bending backwards?
Sure. That sounds like a thing that Emilio Estevez
like
could get.
Fire in the Sky or The Arrival or something like that. But that's a long fucking time ago.
Yeah.
Maybe he can be coaching a hockey team, the Hawkins hockey team. Wasn't he in the Mighty Ducks? Yeah.
Okay. Let me float something.
Okay, float it.
Matthew Broderick.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, star of Ferris Bueller's Day Off, obviously.
He's got the cred.
He's got the 80s cred.
He could be a teacher. That kind of like reprises election role.
Right, right. I could see Matthew Broderick. He's like the level of actor that I think people will go, man, I haven't seen Matthew Broderick in so long, since like Godzilla 2000 or something. What's he been up to? Oh, here he is in Stranger Things.
David Hasselhoff.
That's a good one.
I mean, he's so 80s, man.
Oh, if you can get him in a fucking Trans Am or whatever it is.
Oh, God. It's too bad we've already seen Billy's father, because he would be...
Oh, yeah, he'd be a great...
He'd be amazing, just like playing as a total asshole, like with his shirt unbuttoned down to his like belly button and gold chains. He's like almost still 70s somehow and sleazy, but...
Yeah.
They have we... Yeah, we already met Jonathan's dad, too. He's a real shit, but he would have been real good at that in that role. He's almost too cool to be Jonathan Will's dad.
I still think they missed a huge opportunity not bringing Crispin Glover in.
Yeah.
As a carny or something.
Not too late. You could still fit.
Yeah, true. Especially if you're going bigger on time travel next season.
Yeah. Who played Biff Tanner in the original?
Fuck, I don't remember his name.
But that would be kind of fun,
apparently,
too.
He's like a super nice guy.
Yeah. I don't think he's a total asshole. He's just really good acting. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's move on. Kaylee H. Wanted to weigh in a little on what you said in episode 302, talking about Robin learning the Cyrillic alphabet. I think this situation is actually very plausible for her, especially with just a few short sentences that needed to be decoded. I'm currently studying Russian abroad, so I myself have learned the Russian alphabet, and my only experience with language was Spanish throughout school. It took me about 2 days to understand how the letters compare to English letters and its pronunciation. I have other foreigners in my class studying Russian, and the ones who knew more languages, regardless of their alphabet or structure, caught on quicker to Russian in my class. It's just the nature of the part of your brain that's constantly being exercised to learn languages. I think with Robin's obvious natural ability to learn these languages, she would definitely be able to succeed in this task in a short amount of time. You know, like I said, it wasn't the biggest implausibility, and if it turns out Cyrillic is one of the easier languages to crack, then good on them. Zach L., you guys were talking about Will's sexuality or lack thereof it. I remembered that this wasn't the first time it came up. In season 1, episode 1, around 18 minutes in, Joyce is talking to Hopper and talks about how the other kids make fun of him and how Will's father called him a queer and a fag. Hopper asks, well, is he? And Joyce says, he's missing. So this was never resolved, but it's not the first time it was mentioned. And if the show has taught me anything, it's that while I can like a lot of stuff about the 80s, I shouldn't feel nostalgia for it. The opinions and cultural norms people had then were real shitty.
Sure.
Yeah, it's tough. You know, there's things you can like about different, but the further back in time you go, you're really rolling a lot of progress back for significant parts of our citizenry, and you always got to remember that.
Yeah, like I think those scenes in the newspaper office are hard to watch.
Some people said they were over the top, but
you're wrong about that, especially in a news office,
especially
in that era.
In the Midwest, it tends to be a decade behind. Yeah. like stuff that was would like Mad Men level behavior, you know, maybe that was gauche in the 80s of New York City, but I don't know, because I've seen Wall Street and The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, no, I think in like highly male dominated industries,
aka the workplace back.
Yeah, but like even more so in a fucking newsroom, right? It was like you're a typist, right? if you're anything, and you're a woman in this industry,
yeah,
like you're just gonna be typing the fucking stories that we do. You're gonna be getting us our coffee, our sandwiches. I thought that was super accurate. Hard to watch.
Yeah,
like not something that's cool today. Definitely,
it's like in the Weird Al Yankovic UHF plot point, Fran Drescher. Hey, broads don't belong in broadcasting, you
Jesus.
Know?
She puts the broad in broadcasting. Yeah. That's what it's supposed to be.
Got a Veronica Corningstone that shit.
Also, please don't say broad. It's not very respectful.
I'm just quoting UHF, okay?
No, not you, the actor.
But yeah, so back about Will. It's tough because he's young and, you know, kids, he's not finished baking. Like, he could be, like we said, he could be gay, could be asexual, could be bisexual, could be something else. He could be just like experimenting, not sure. Or he could be super fucking traumatized by all the shit that he went through the last few years, spent a lot of time in fucking various cocoons and being mentally raped by other extra dimensional beings while his friends were being just regular kids. And he's a little stunted in his sexual development period. So like,
and he's sensitive about it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe he's heard his dad and his mom have whispered conversations about it, and everybody making fun of him at school, and it's put him off like he's very super sensitive. So when Mike just said, it's not my fault you're not interested in the girls, he just instantly went back to like, oh, Mike's bullying me like everybody else has. Like,
yeah,
so many different explanations for why a very young adolescent could be flaky about concepts of sexuality. But again, this Noah Schnapp kid is super good, and all of those possibilities are kind of there in that performance, and it'll be fun to see, like, you know, if we get to know more about Will. I hope so, because he got to do a little bit more this year, and I think he actually is one of the better young actors. Mm-hmm. I just need him to do even more in season 4.
Yeah.
That's my motto. Will more in season 4.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
Andrew E., in the episode E Pluribus Unum, right after the intro music, there's a sign on the fair that says Mayor Klein Presents. The sign is styled after the Trump MAGA sign. See screenshots attached. I'm guessing we're meant to draw the parallel of a corrupt leader. When I got the email, I'm like, you know, red, white, and blue with stars.
Yeah.
Pretty generic. Fucking generic political sign. Mm-hmm. But when I saw them side by side, they're exactly five stars on top. Exactly. It's the very similar font. If you look for them, there's a little there. I don't think they do a lot of overt political commentary, but there's definitely some to be found in the season. Keith Z, anyone else find it amazing and ironic that not only can Billy be possessed by a pan-dimensional demonic entity, but he can act of it as its chief henchman and yet still be less of a complete asshole than when he's just a high school student?
Arguable.
Yeah.
Arguable. Yeah. But okay, I see where you're coming from.
I mean, he actually redeemed himself while he was under the influence of that, so arguably it was a personality upgrade.
Yeah.
The Mind Flayer taking him over. Christina J. Hey guys, love your show. I'm loving the new additions of Erica and Robin to the cast. I do believe Erica is supposed to be 10, and as an African American woman myself, with three sisters grow up in the 80s, I thought she's pretty dang accurate, especially with the whole blaxploitation era in the previous decade. I mean, that makes sense. Like, if you grew up and your role models are like Shaft and Foxy Brown, mm-hmm. then, you know, there is a little bit of sauce that comes with those dishes.
Sure.
Christina continues, I understand that she can come off a little extra, but I can't help but chuckle at the memories. I love how she's always running with the squad of her younger friends. At her age, my sisters were pretending to smoke using parts of hair rollers. I feel like the constant toot is part of the culture. However, I would like to know more about her sans the sass. It seems like next year they might have like a mini Stranger Things just with Erica and her friends. Like, I would love to see them running a My Little Ponies campaign with D&D rules.
Uh-huh.
Like, just straight up do what Dustin was talking about, except for they're actually rolling for success. And
I mean, Dustin could even be like DMing for him, right? Like,
yeah.
I could see where like Dustin and Erica are now somewhat friends, at least. They've been through a lot together.
And it would be interesting if like the monster from their campaign ended up being like kind of taking the form of the Demigorgon or the Mind Flayer of next year. There's a lot they can do with that, and I'm pretty excited. The only thing that makes me scared is like, my God, this is already an enormous cast.
Mm-hmm.
And every time the internet takes a shine to somebody, so it's like, you know, first year is already pretty big ensemble. Then we add Max and Billy and get Eric introduced. Eric becomes a bigger part. Then you bring in her friends, like, Lord, this is Game of Thrones all of a sudden.
Yeah.
But yeah, more Erica. Flesh her out. Aaron, FC, I haven't been able to find anything online about this Easter egg, so I don't know how many people caught it. But the line about getting blueprints from the county recorder's office is ripped verbatim from the movie Sneakers at 1 hour, 18 minutes into the movie. Carl, played by River Phoenix, says the exact same line when he gets the blueprints for the toy company. Even Dustin's reply of not bad is from Sneakers 2. Now, Sneakers came out in 1992. We found in our research that they sometimes color outside the lines with their references.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly with audio cues,
Music and stuff.
Yeah, music and stuff like that. But maybe they're starting to play a little fast and loose in the movies too. Will M. In previous seasons, the only thing the show had to convince me of was the fantastical elements of the Upside Down. Otherwise, the setting felt like the real world. This season, the Russian subplot really interrupted my suspension of disbelief. And he continues to talk. I think we kind of covered this, but do you have any other thoughts about the idea that season 3 might be a little bit more cartoonish or outlandish, James Bondish than we've gotten used to with previous seasons?
I mean, I don't have too many additional thoughts. It honestly didn't bother me.
I'd worry more if this was like a 10 season deal.
Sure, yeah.
But like, you know, there is an end, it is in sight, and they you kind of have to get bigger and bigger and bigger in these type of things. So hopefully that the show will wrap up and end naturally before it gets so big that the majority of people can't follow along anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Renee from Yosemite, regarding just hanging out with Fagin in the gang. Remember, we had a question about what kind of reference or what friend group we missed with Jonathan. She says when Nancy and Jonathan were fighting in the car, she made the comment, "Oh, good, another Oliver Twist story." Oliver Twist is a book, of course, by Charles Dickens. About a poor orphan boy in 1830s England. The Fagin Jonathan refers to is the gang leader of juvenile pickpockets, and Oliver spends time with these getting into trouble. So he was just shining her on about her Oliver Twist crack.
Yeah.
Jeff from Chicago, land of the mutant teenage girls. regarding why unanswered questions in Stranger Things are okay. He says, why did I feel as though not understanding a damn thing about the White Walkers and Game of Thrones struck a major blow to my enjoyment of that series, but I don't care if we learn that much more about the Upside Down. Like, if the Mind Flayer controls all beings, or there are separate actors like Demogorgons and the Mind Flayers that act independently, I guess it would be nice to know, but all I really care about in the show is, and how it hangs, is the interactions with the Upside Down and how it affects the party and the friends and family of them. Is this because the show is mainly about children coping with these challenges and Game of Thrones is more about the consequences and larger themes such as power? Are the Duffer Brothers better at creating a character-led show than the Double Ds? I'd be interested in hearing you two, if you two feel the same way and to discuss this. I think it's probably all of the above.
I don't... It's weird to say, oh, the Double Ds are not as good at creating characters because they didn't have to create characters. Like, that's the weird thing, right? Yeah. It's an adaptation versus a wholly original work. Mm-hmm. I don't know how much direct comparison we can make between the Duffers and the other D brothers. But as far as the show goes, I think the show had trained us to want information about everything. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Stranger Things has done that, which makes it easier when we don't get the information.
Yeah, they've really never taken the time to explain Elle's powers and how they made the portal. There's just a lot of stuff that you kind of intuit, but it's not the point. Because the point is you got a scared little girl who's alienated from society and she's mm-hmm. been accepted amongst a group of her peers. And then they do good things together. So... yeah, like the stakes. Also, these are all very small. Like, all of the action in Stranger Things is contained amongst a group of like 10 to 15 people. Mm-hmm. Where Game of Thrones, like, my God, the main cast was like 50, and then there's extended cast of like 100 people, and then it involved entire continents.
Yeah.
So when you got those bigger stakes, you kind of have to have bigger answers. Where when you have smaller stakes, you really only have to answer the things that are important to Elle and Mike and Will and Lucas mm-hmm. and Dustin. So, Dr. Cynthia, the summer of 85 was right after I graduated high school, so you can imagine how psyched I was about Stranger Things 3. As I do for all my shows, I plan to binge watch along with your schedule so I could get all the recaps, but my 14-year-old daughter refused to wait for me.
Yeah.
Imagine my frustration as I'm overhearing my 14-year-old hysterically crying in the basement. Knowing I'd be seeing her friends and terrified of getting spoilers, I just forced myself to rush through the whole damn thing as fast as I could. I loved it, but I really wish Netflix had released the episodes a few at a time so I could have savored each of them a bit longer. I didn't like feeling forced to binge it. Am I just too old, or is this new format just killing the buzz of TV watching? I really miss the water cooler chattering after episodes. There's so much cool 80s stuff to process, and it gets lost in the force feeding. Don't you guys agree?
Yeah, I've been thinking about this. Because it's clear to me that this is not a trend. I think it's something that Netflix is pointedly doing. And, mm-hmm. you know, they're not the only ones doing it, but they're not also not everyone does it.
They're just about the only ones that do it. Like, I can't think of, there's no other network I can think of that consistently just shits the whole thing out at once.
Yeah, I can't think of an example. So, yeah, you might be right about that. But I think this works really well for younger people, because every day you go to school or you talk with your friends on your phone, and I'm talking about texting, not fucking phone mm-hmm. calls. Nobody does that anymore.
Sure. What are we, farmers?
Yeah. Get out of here. And there are all of these opportunities to get together and talk about the new show that you just binged. And you have more time to binge shows. Like, I think this is a young person's method of releasing and watching television. And it works great for that, because it always gives them something new to talk about the next day at school, the next week at school. Oh, man, did you see all 8 of those episodes? Yeah, I did. I watched them all. Let's talk about it. Adults don't have those luxuries. They don't have the time to binge watch 8 episodes in a row, typically. And if they do, they're certainly not doing that every week. And so they're not constantly seeing the new show that's out and being able to talk about it. So I think it's inconvenient for us as adults, but I think it's actually really cool for kids. Or not even just kids, but young people in general.
I still, like, but why does Netflix... But it seems to me that this is damaging to Netflix's brands, because it's hard to make an argument that it's better to have Stranger Things come out July 4th weekend and then everybody talk about it for about a week and then it's gone. Mm-hmm. Versus it debuts July 4th weekend, everyone's super excited about it, and then it's airing the next 8 weeks. Maybe they do 2 weeks, so you get 4 weeks. But you're now 1/12 of the year. You've captured people's cultural and imaginations about Stranger Things rather than 1/52nd of the year. Mm-hmm. And I just see that it's harder for these Netflix properties to gain that kind of like mind share, because they're always, it's about like, okay, here's 8 hours sure. of content, here's 13 more, and here's 13 more. And they always have, you know, they have to sustain this breakneck pace to keep people engaged. And I just don't, I don't know. I wish I had their data, because I don't, it seems to me that, so if you release it in binge, then you encourage people to watch as much as they can, so that like people probably finish it more often than like if something comes out over like a 10-week and some people get delayed or distracted or whatever. But I still don't know how that translates into dollars and cents for them. I don't know.
I mean, when looked at sort of, I guess, separate from the idea of like, oh, we want to make a show popular and say we just want to make Netflix popular. Mm-hmm. I think that might be a more valid way to go about it. Just like, we're going to keep you on Netflix by pumping out this content, and you're going to be so inundated by that you really don't have time to watch an HBO or a Hulu or whatever. We just got something new for you. Why ever leave Netflix?
Right.
Why ever? Because there's always something new for
you. Just keep them captured within that ecosystem.
Yeah. Yeah. So yes, it doesn't service like, you know, frankly, our business model here at Bald Move. Because people don't buy into the show as much and get as much hype around a single show, and it doesn't last as long. Mm-hmm. But I think for Netflix, like, they're building hype for Netflix, not for Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And I think it might do better in that regard.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if they continue. Because, again, I thought my initial worry is that everyone would be doing that. And then how in the world could you, you know, how could we ever hope to cover some of these shows that have come out on, you know, Amazon, some of these shows that come out on Hulu, but it seems like the majority of them aren't like that, you know? Like,
yeah, I wonder what HBO is going to get up to when they actually get their content pipeline going.
Yeah.
Because I know they want to speed up the frequency of releases. Will they stick with the once a week, one episode a week, or are they going to go more like Netflix?
I think they could. It's just like more of like HBO is all built around Sunday night, right? And I think that it's not
currently,
so much they want to like shit everything out on one particular night, but it's more like, hey, maybe people should think about us in terms of like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday nights as well. Or, mm-hmm. you know, could they, instead of like, they seem like they alternate between comedy, drama, why don't like Friday's comedy and Sunday's drama, or like start using the days? I don't know. I'm kind of interested too, but I used to worry that everyone's going to go to Netflix. It seems like not many are, probably because they don't have the output that Netflix does.
That's fair. Yeah, you got to release
like,
a lot
Hulu
of stuff.
Hulu pulls that shit. They
it.
Got 4 weeks of mind share for the whole year. Like, mm-hmm. you know, say what you will about Netflix. Like, damn near every 6 weeks, they come out of something that's newsworthy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, last year they had the Haunted of Hill House, Haunt Street Blues.
Yeah, the Haunting of Hill House.
They had the Marvel stuff. They've had Stranger Things. They had House of Cards back in the beginning. You know, I know they're doing all these Netflix original movies they've got. Like, it seems like every six, you know, they had the Bird Box. Every 6 weeks or so, they have something noteworthy. So they don't have the longevity of each individual seasons. It's just more like, holy shit, look at this crazy thing that came out of Netflix. Everyone's got to watch it, you know?
Yeah.
And that's got value.
It clearly. Sure does.
Sarah T, in your podcast about finale, you say you're confused about why Jonathan's moving in with his mom and where he could just get a job and stay, but he can't because you've lost track of his and Nancy's school year. They're both seniors in high school when the buyers move. Jonathan and Nancy are and have been in the same grade while Steve is a year ahead. In season two, Steve talks to Nancy in the car about how if he doesn't go to college, he could be around for her senior year. So Stranger Things 3 takes place during the summer following Stranger Things 2, making it the summer between Jonathan and Nancy's junior and senior years in high school. It's extra bittersweet or cruel if you do the math on the time jump.
Okay.
They'd be moving around October 5th, meaning Jonathan and Nancy and the kids have started their senior year in high school together and now are being separated. oof, my heart.
This goes all the way back to season one, like where Joyce is talking about how Will is this fragile little leaf that needs to be taken care of and Jonathan Strong. Mm-hmm. Like, she's really throwing Jonathan under the bus. Hey, Jonathan, we're going to move in your fucking final year of high school.
Right.
And you're going to go to an entirely new school. You're going to have no friends.
Right.
Just fucking deal with it, because I know you can. We need to get Will out of this town. Like, well, that's a real dick move.
I mean, her job's gone too. Like, says, I don't think she chose it.
Go to fucking Sam Goody. She can get a job. Yeah. there are plenty of jobs in the mall, Joyce.
Sign up for the mall cleanup crew. So what? You get some, in breathing in some what do you call it?
Upside down spores.
Little meslomyoma. Yeah. What's a little bit of that with for your kids? Come on, Joyce.
You might get infested by the mind flare. I don't know. But think of Jonathan here.
Yeah. Yeah. Someone think of Jonathan. Chris from New Hampshire. I just wanted to bring up something my wife called the moment the scene happened. When the three guys are playing Dungeons and Dragons and they come up against a zombie horde, Will gets exasperated for them to not actually wanting to play. And Mike is like, fine, okay, we cast a spell, burn the whole room down, and die as martyrs to save the town. As soon as Mike said that, she said, that's totally going to happen. Someone's going to sacrifice themselves and die to save everyone. And that's exactly what Hopper did.
Yeah.
Pretty cool foreshadow, especially with the zombie horde. Mm-hmm. I remember when that happened, we were like, oh god, because we were looking for the Battle of Starcourt to be kind of like a zombie mall fight, and we were expecting a little bit more literal fulfillment of that particular prophecy, Chris, but good on your wife for spotting it, and we forgot to mention it, I believe, on the podcast. Ashley R., you mentioned Chekhov's gun several times this season. I felt like the Duffer brothers did Nancy a huge disservice by introducing advice from her mother in pursuit of her news story and then just first killing everyone at the news office and finally having another news source tell her story. To me, it made the whole mother-daughter scene one of the only times a parent who isn't Joyce or Hopper actually parented irrelevant. What do you think?
I don't know. I haven't thought of it.
Her advice was to finish it, right? I mean, Nancy emphatically finished it.
Yeah, sure. That's fair. She got to the bottom of it.
She believed in herself.
She dealt with the problem.
Her instincts were right.
She did not get to write the story about it, though. That's true.
Yeah, but like, this isn't about Stranger Careers. It's Stranger Things. So like, Nancy being right and honestly being one of the bigger badasses. Like, she's the shotgun wielding, munitions expert of the group at this point. So I thought it paid off in that way. Not as career advice, but like, believe in yourself and stand up for yourself and follow something through. She did definitely took that advice. Johnny H. from Worthington in the UK. Joyce has had a real rough time with family and romance. Mm-hmm. Do you think she will be given the happy ending that she deserves? If so, how? Interested to hear your thoughts.
I mean, the pretty obvious one is Hopper comes back, fall in love, live happily ever after. The end.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Sorry.
I mean, there are probably a myriad of ways they could give Joyce a happy ending that I'd be satisfied with.
I think that's actually what's going to happen, though, because this show's just got too much Spielberg in its DNA. And Spielberg, when he's in this lane, doesn't usually go for bittersweet or sad endings.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes he'll get in that lane when he's doing a Schindler's List or whatnot. But, you know, this is 80s Spielberg, and E.T.'s not going to die. His parents are going to come home and pick him up.
And this is exactly why I think none of the kids will die at the end of this thing. Yeah. I don't think you're going to see a single kid permanently harmed by anything that goes on in this show, including Elle.
Yeah.
I think all of them are going to survive, no scratches.
Hmm. You just hoisted me by my own logic, because I have long thought that Elle might be the one that dies, because, you know, she learns enough about humanity and self-sacrifice to sacrifice herself for the people she loves. But that's not very Spielbergian.
Yeah, it doesn't feel very like 80s kids kind of. I don't know. It just doesn't feel like that. The heroic sacrifice can come from an adult, I think, but not one of the kids in this story.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think Hopper's a perfect example. Like, if he's totally dead, I will view that as a heroic sacrifice that was totally within the spectrum of these 80s movies.
Sure.
Will being killed at the end of this thing is not really on my radar.
Amber, while I agree with Jim that Eric and Dustin's little nerd talk was a bit too cute considering the urgency of the situation, though it didn't bother me as much as it seemed to bother him, I'm surprised that you didn't point out how they brought that moment back in episode 8 and used it as a reason to how they could navigate Murray to the correct location. If you think about it, it's slightly unrealistic to think that these children, though they are both obviously smart, would remember a layout of this never-ending vent system. But the Duffer brothers made it a point for them to explain that it was at this point that they were having their nerd discussion, which gave them the recollection of which way they turned. Lesser shows would have just had that cute moment and that would have been it, but they actually were able to bring it back in a somewhat reasonable way that enhanced the plot development. Maybe you guys missed it, but I thought it might have turned your views around a little bit.
No, I mean, that's good of them. I still think that scene was tedious given the urgency of the situation. But yeah, I mean, that's great that they, you know, bring those little moments back.
I also had someone else write in that the defend the scene on the basis of there's not a lot of girl nerd representation. Mm-hmm. And there's certainly, as this series pointed out, lots of nerdy girl shit to be had in the 80s. So, like, it doesn't address your tediousness, but it's more of like, well, you got to get it in some way. And they make it play off plot wise.
I think here's the thing, because this is one of the episodes I rewatched mm-hmm. last night. And I think that scene would have been twice as good if Dustin hadn't ever stopped working on the box that he's sitting in front of. If he had had this conversation while opening this thing that they so urgently needed to get open, because in that scene, he's just stopping. He's putting his hands down at his side, turning to Erica and having a fucking conversation about what a nerd she is.
When he's literally 2 seconds from completing the task.
Yeah. And if they had made, okay, well, he's 2 minutes from completing this task.
Yeah.
He's working on it while he's carrying on this sort of annoying conversation to him. Mm. You know, it's like, I think they could have directed that scene better.
That's actually a good point, because the whole point of that is for him to get not the upper hand over Erica, but kind of like, okay, look, you know, she needed a little bit of air let out from her because
sure.
she's a little bit too much of a sass machine. And for him to like be doing that as he's actually, you know, saving the day, and like if he punctuated his point about, you know, ergo nerd with like sparks flying and the fan stopping, he would have, like, it would have done the objectives of that scene, like, even better. So
I think so.
Yeah. Not the biggest misstep.
But I'm all for, like, inserting the My Little Ponies and stuff in there. I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Nick K. I think Stranger Things 4 will be the season of Will. The Duffer brothers seem to have a desire for narrative balance, and boy, that needs a chance to shine. The Mind Flayer has an almost unbreakable psychic control over its host, but only if the host have appropriate hardware, i.e. being injected into or bitten. Maybe Will can find a way to exploit his apparent sensitivity to the Mind Flayer and either discover a counter to the hardware or act as a jammer so that Eleven can focus on dealing with the big bad. They are kind of... I mean, it's very interesting, the fact that they are being paired as brother and sister, and they both have the closest affinity to the Upside Down. Like, Will's got the, like, extrasensory perception of when the Mind Flayer's around. L, of course, is L. Like, if L needs to recruit a team of superpowered teenagers, it would be interesting if Will is, you know... The other thing is, like, maybe this would awaken some kind of power in Will. Like, some kind of latent psychic power.
Is it... Which one's more likely to give you psychic powers, being infested by an otherworldly demon or your mom experimenting with LSD?
I was going to say, LSD in the womb or interdimensional demon inhabiting your body for a season.
Probably the demon thing.
Yeah. No, it's certainly a portal, and it'd also be a way to make this guy who's... I mean, that's kind of Elle's story. She's a victimized little girl who became powerful through that.
Yeah.
It would be a nice little lyrical echo of that to have Will kind of go through the same.
Mm-hmm.
But either way, yeah, just Will needs just more to do. So
yeah, I mean, aside from like a scene that I thought was really good this season, he was kind of... I mean, the joke is all he did this season was touch the back of his neck and say he's here,
which is probably because he did some amazing work in season two and he's being tortured and screaming. But yeah, I want to see more of him, and I'm sure we will. That is going to complete our coverage of Stranger Things, unless the Duffer brothers do something truly crazy at Comic-Con, like announce that they're coming back for Christmas 2020 or 2019 for Stranger Things 4, which, is like we've discussed, is not completely beyond the realm of possibility. If that happens, I'm sure we'll be back to talk about it, because why not? The feed's already warmed up. It's the microphones are going. It'd be really easy to do that. But otherwise, We don't expect to see you on this feed until the next, until Stranger Things 4 actually starts to heat up, till we get some trailers, till we start time to start doing previews. We have enjoyed the heck out of watching Stranger Things 3 with you. As always, our feedback is strangerthings@baldmove.com. If any last minute thoughts, probably be better discussed on the forums, because I don't monitor the email boxes in the off season. Forums.baldmove.com. There's several threads to talk about Stranger Things, even one thread about, like, if you're one of the few that kind of were a little disappointed, there's a thread where you can talk about your feelings about that on the forums as well. Thanks for spending your fourth weekend with us and the last week or so. And this is not it for Bald Move, of course. We're covering there's Bald Move TV that's always got something every week. There's Bald Movies that usually has a movie every week. We're seeing Lion King this week. And, you know, the fall's got a lot of big things coming down. The Pike, The Watchmen, His Dark Material, The Expanse coming back. Lots of cool things. Stick with us at baldmove.com. Have a great, hopefully short off-season of Stranger Things. And until Stranger Things 4, I'm Aaron.
I'm Jim.
See ya.